everybody. You're listening to Working Mother Radio. I'm Bettina Bush, your host, and welcome to the show. You know, I'm so excited to be here today. You know, we've had such a great summer. We've had so many wonderful guests coming on talking about, you know, we run the gamut, man. We've had so many different topics this summer, and I feel like we're really making some headway as working moms and making sure that we're spending quality time with our kids and being the best that we can be at work and, you know, really not beating ourselves up over the fact that we can't be everything to everyone all the time, learning how to say no. You know, there's so much that goes into being a working mom. And I just want to take a moment to applaud all of you for doing the best that you can for your family. And, you know, part of that is listening to the show and making sure that we have all the tools that we need to get where we're going and to be the best that we can be for our families. So thanks so much for being here with us. Now, I have a huge, huge show for you today. I'm so excited. I know a lot of you have heard of Marianne Williamson. I have been a fan of Marianne Williamson since college, and I, you know, which is a lot further back than for me than it is for a lot of you. But I love her. She's amazing, and she's got so much insight. She's a real thought leader in our society, and she comes from a spiritual base of positivity and how, you know, giving us real tools that we can use to get the most out of our lives. So I'm really looking forward to bringing her to you later in this show. But first up, I want to talk about motherhood, you know, back to the basics of, you know, when we're pregnant. I know a lot of us are growing our families, and you know, I for one am done. The factory is closed, but many of our listeners I know, you know, are working on baby number two or three or four or five, and one of the concerns that we have when we're dealing with expanding our families or starting our families is our health. And a lot of what doesn't get a lot of play in the media and in conversations is how pregnancy affects our mental health. And, you know, we talk about our physical health all the time and, you know, different ways to deal with morning sickness and things like that and what to do after the baby's born in terms of, you know, sleep training and, you know, those types of avenues. But a lot of the time we skip over the fact that mom has a lot to deal with physically when it comes to pregnancy and afterwards, and the mental health of the mom can be very much affected by pregnancy. So here today to talk to us about the health aspects of our mental health surrounding pregnancy is Dr. Sarah Randall. She's a licensed psychologist specializing in, and help me out with this, peripartum mental health issues.
Right. Peripartum. Yes, that's exactly right. And the prefix para is similar to perimeter or peripheral, which means surrounding. And so the focus of my work is really to bring attention to any mental health events that may be occurring before, during, or after pregnancy, because we really have to be watching from all angles because it's such a major time in a mom's life.
You know, the first time that I ever really saw this being brought to the forefront in the media was with Brooke Shields. And then most recently, I saw it again come out with Hayden Panettiere. And yes. I think it's so important, you know, that we stay on top of these things, whether it's affecting a celebrity at the time or not, because it's an ongoing issue for so many women in our society. And it's not something that gets talked about a lot. And I think that we really need to be aware of the different ways that we can be affected. So thank you so much for shedding some light on that for us.
No problem. Yeah, I completely agree with you. I think I have such gratitude for the increased awareness around postpartum depression, both through celebrity testimonials and also testimonials from real moms through blogging and Facebook. You know, it's really helping to spread the word that this is a major issue. But there is some difficulties that new moms that experience that may not be getting as much media attention. And when moms and dads actually are pretty vulnerable during the postpartum period, they can be susceptible to issues like postpartum OCD, postpartum anxiety and panic disorder, postpartum PTSD, and postpartum insomnia. So I wanted to kind of take the opportunity to talk to your listeners about how to look out for some of these ones that we're not hearing about quite as much, and maybe make it a little bit easier for moms to talk to each other and to reach out to their providers to just check in to see if everything's going all right.
I think that's a great idea. And you know, one of the things that I know we get a lot from our listeners is that they feel as though sometimes when we talk about these things, we talk about the same things over and over again, and they really want a deeper look at things. So I'm excited that you know, you just outlined all those different scenarios, because I personally had no idea that OCD could come of could be a postpartum issue. Like, that's news to me. So right after the break, we're going to come back and we're going to dig deeper into this issue. I'm Bettina Bush, your host. You're listening to Working Mother Radio. Stay with us.
Across the globe, a child goes blind every 5 seconds. We live in a culture saturated with visual cues, but for some, the world is a blur. Since 1997, the Little Rock Foundation has been leading innovative social programs, advancing legislation, and providing information and education to those affected by visual impairment. Gain the resources you need or make a donation today to the Little Rock Foundation. Find us on the web at tlrf.org. You can make a difference.
Hey, everybody. Welcome back to Working Mother Radio. I'm Bettina Bush, your host, and we are continuing our conversation with Dr. Sarah Randall. And we are talking about some of the issues that can come with the postpartum period and things that we haven't necessarily heard a lot about in the media, such as, you know, not only depression. I think that's the one that we do hear the most about. But you mentioned OCD, PTSD, insomnia. Now, let's talk about how this even comes about.
Right. Well, one thing to keep in mind that I want to be clear about is that the statistics are really in a new mother's favor. By and large, most moms will not experience a mental health event outside the baby blues and normal acclimation to a new child in their life. But not all women react the same way to the rapid deceleration of hormones that are occurring in their body. And so because of this, we really want to take a look at, especially after 2 to 3 weeks postpartum, because we're always going to see a little bit of baby blues, you know, some sensitivity, mood swings, normative anxiety. What we're looking for is intensity and duration of these things, and also specific hallmarks for specific diagnoses. So one of the ones that we were talking about is postpartum OCD. Many people have heard of OCD. It most commonly gets associated with excessive hand washing, a fear of contamination, and that definitely is a type of OCD. But what happens with new moms, in fact, in about 4% of new moms and even some dads as well, is there's two parts. There's the obsession component, and then there's the compulsion. And the obsession in this context is defined as unwanted, intrusive, and often terrifying thoughts or images about harm happening to the baby. And it usually has to do with accidentally or intentionally harming the baby, even though the parents have no desire or intention of acting on these, and the thoughts come in completely out of the blue. So a mom who is suffering from OCD she's not delusional. She's not worrying about the child being like abducted by aliens. These are worries about much more mundane threats, like images of dropping the baby or an accident while bathing the baby. And as a result, to alleviate the anxiety, we see the compulsions crop up. And the compulsions in this context are repetitive rituals and hypervigilance or even avoidance of the baby. And while that's designed to bring the mom relief, there's usually little or no actual bearing on the safety of the child, and so the poor mom is in this endless loop of bizarre rituals. So we want to make sure that we're talking to the mom about any thoughts or images that are popping into her head, that are unwanted, that are troubling her, so we can get a sense of whether or not this might be going on.
Ooh, I honestly, this is something that I think a lot of women deal with that they're not able to put their finger on. They don't realize that it's something that is a mental health issue and not necessarily just a part of feeling, you know, like they're making that adjustment to being a new mom. Where do you draw that line? How do you see the difference?
That's such a great question, because the line is usually drawn with the compulsion part. Because obviously there's a normative amount of protection that we would expect. You know, we baby-proof houses, and, you know, we make sure that somebody's always got eyes on one of the children, and that's all completely normal. But when moms and dads are checking an inordinate amount of times, cannot seem to get any relief or a reduction in their anxiety or through reassurances, or they're counting or engaging in certain activities that are not at all related to the safety of the child, then we start to think, okay, something else is going on here, because we do expect, obviously, a normal level of vigilance. But hypervigilance or avoidance or repetitive rituals that are linked to wanting to alleviate anxiety, that's when we start to kind of raise our eyebrows. And you know what? All you need is a pink flag. You don't need to wait for a red flag. I say go in with the pink flags. Just ask your doctor or get a consultation with a therapist and say, here's what's going on. Is this something I need to worry about? Because the earlier you get an answer, the more quickly intervention can start.
And I think that's such a great piece of advice, because I think a lot of the time, as women, we tend to power through and we tend to be like, oh, no, I'm fine. Oh, you know, it doesn't require, I'm not going to be a baby about this. It doesn't require a conversation with my doctor. But you know what? When you're going through this whole maternity time, you got to be at the doctor so much anyway. Bring it up.
Yes.
Talk.
Yes.
You know, have these conversations.
Absolutely.
Don't feel like you're being a wimp, or don't feel like you're being, you know, lame for being concerned about yourself, because we need to take care of ourselves so that we can take care of our children. It's important that we remain healthy so that our children can be healthy. We're going to come back with more after the break, right after this. I'm Bettina Bush, your host. You're listening to Working Mother Radio. Stay with us.
Looking to become an entrepreneur and purchase your first business? Benetrends Financial has been helping entrepreneurs fund their dreams of business ownership for over 30 years. Whether it's using a retirement plan to buy a business, securing an SBA loan, or utilizing a dozen other options, Benetrends works hard every day to get entrepreneurs the funding they need quickly, safely, and economically. Speak with a funding expert today. Call 866-423-6387 or visit Benetrends.com. That's BENETRENDS.com. Benetrends.
Hey, everybody, welcome back to Working Mother Radio. I'm Bettina Bush, your host, and we are having a conversation about the postpartum period and the issues that we could be having with our mental health. And Dr. Sarah Randall is so graciously here today to share with us her insights on what it is that we could possibly be experiencing, and you know how we can identify it and take care of ourselves as moms. Before we get back into the conversation, Dr. Randall, I wanted to make sure that if our listeners wanted to find you or learn more about what you are you doing at your practice, where you are online.
That would be wonderful. Any listeners can find more about me and about the services that I provide at www.CalabasasBehavioralHealth.com, or we shortened it too to make it easier, www.calabh.com. I'm all about shortcuts as a mom myself, so feel free to type in either one and you'll still find me either way.
Perfect. Thank you so much. And now let's get back to some of the other mental health issues we had kind of previewed prior. PTSD was something that came up. Now, PTSD, yes. I think, is something that most people associate with the military. You know, they associate with people who, you know, are coming back from war, veterans, you know, who are having these post-traumatic stress issues from, you know, seeing horrific things overseas. But this is something that can be associated with the maternal experience.
Absolutely. And you're so right. It is most often associated with the veteran population or survivors of assault, or an accident or something like that. But growing research is pointing to another vulnerable population, which is the delivering mother. Something close to 10% of women can experience postpartum PTSD. In fact, I actually experienced it myself. And many people wonder, well, aren't all births difficult or painful? And why do some moms get PTSD and some don't? And the truth is, we don't exactly know why. But a major influential factor is the mother's perception of threat to either herself or the baby, as well as a complication or injury in the birth process. And another mediating factor is how the mother is communicated to during her delivery. Because what can happen is that moms who have unplanned C-sections or who have a major discrepancy between the idea of how things were going to go and then how they actually go during the birth process can really feel confused and scared and vulnerable. So how they're approached by providers And the care with which they are communicated with can have a major impact on how the mom remembers this event. But also intrusive cervical exams, use of forceps or vacuum extractor, or physical complications like fistulas, severe perineal tearing, or preeclampsia can all put a mom at risk for PTSD. And just so people are wondering, well, what does PTSD look like? There's a lot of re-experiencing of the event, and that can be in the form of nightmares or intrusive thoughts. Moms with PTSD do not want to talk about the birth. They want to avoid anything that has anything to do with it. And unfortunately, sometimes this can include the baby. So there can be a sense of detachment. There's irritability, hypervigilance, and difficulty sleeping, even if your baby is sleeping well. So there's an insomnia component there too, which can be very frustrating. There can be panic attacks associated with it as well. So if a mom is suffering from any of that and they feel like their birth was traumatic, then it's really important for them to reach out for help, because there is absolutely help for you. And if there is a second I can take to kind of talk a little bit too about how to talk to moms that might be going through this in a compassionate way, I think that many people believe that they're being compassionate by normalizing things. For example, a new mom might share with another mom, "I just don't feel anything towards my baby. Like, I'm numb. I think there's something really wrong with me." And a normalizing response may be, "Oh, that's totally normal. I went through the same thing with my son. It'll change over time." And the thing we have to watch out for with this type of message and this normalization is that it could discount the mom's concerns, and there may be an implicit message to wait longer. And I would suggest validating and encouraging her to reach out for help. Something along the lines of, "Wow, that sounds really hard, and it reminds me of something I went through with my son. Maybe you can call and consult with a therapist just to make sure everything is going okay." Both ways validate, but one also encourages the mom to reach out for some help, and I think that that's very important.
That's huge, because a lot of our default is not necessarily to reach out for help. And if you do hear a mom expressing something like that in a situation where she feels safe, talking to a friend, mm-hmm. She feels not judged, then it's a perfect opportunity to help guide her toward getting some help, because clearly she's uncomfortable enough to bring it up to feel like maybe there is an issue here. So, it's always wise to encourage someone to just talk to somebody and see if there's anything there. If there's nothing there, great. No harm, no foul. But it's always better to err on the side of caution and to make sure we're okay. I mean, Lord knows we will rush to the doctor, if we think anything's wrong with our child. We will drop everything, but we won't do it for ourselves. And it's something that, we really do need to shift our culture on when it comes to moms taking care of mom. So, and taking care of one another, encouraging each other as women and as moms, confiding in one another to encourage one another to go that extra mile to get that help. So thank you for that. I think one of the greatest things we can do on this show is help not only give each other tools, in terms of, helping to identify what could be happening, but also putting words in our mouth, helping us, know what to say in which situations and how to say it in a way that can be effective. So we so appreciate your being here today, Dr. Randall. It's really been helpful.
Thank you so much for the opportunity. Thank you.
I'm Bettina Bush, your host. You're listening to Working Mother Radio, and we are going to be back with more right after this, including Marianne Williamson. So stay with us.
Hey, it's Alan Taylor. Are you looking for an opportunity to buy a franchise, one that you can really wrap your arms around? Crunch Fitness is really a great opportunity for you. Now, here's a fitness company that's about $10 a month to join. So even if you just want to join, it's a great deal. You want to check it out because I have been personally watching this company grow like crazy. Visit them online at crunchfranchise.com and be in business for yourself, but not by yourself, and have fun doing it.
Hey, everybody. Welcome back to Working Mother Radio. I'm Bettina Bush, your host, and I am so excited to bring to you today an exceptional leader in thought in our time. And she's not only a best-selling author many times over, she has a book out right now that is absolutely phenomenal and I think extremely timely. I teased it earlier in the show, and so I know you know what's coming. I'd like to introduce you to Marianne Williamson. Thank you so much for being here today.
Thank you so much for having me.
Now, you know, I want to say first off that I have been reading your books and following your work since the mid-90s, and thank you so much for everything that you've put out there, because I do think you've had a tremendous influence on our thoughts and our world, and especially the female demographic. I think a lot of us have turned to you for a lot of insight. And I want to talk to you about your new book, Tears to Triumph, because for me, the glaring question about Tears to Triumph is why this book and why now? Why did you feel that this was the time that we needed to hear this message and to think about these very real issues in our society?
Well, people hear you on the level that you speak from. So I've always written the book that expressed a passion of mine at that time. That's the only way I'm going to reach deep in you, is if it's something that comes from deep in me. So as I've gone through my life, whatever happened to be going on for me and what I was trying to understand more deeply in spiritual terms, that's what I've written about. In this particular one, not only navigating the topic of navigating sadness, navigating painful times in my life was up for me, but also the fact that it seems in the last few years that everybody's on meds, that you look turned away and all of a sudden you look back and what's going on here? We talk about there's an epidemic of depression, but there's clearly an epidemic of the over-medication of Americans and particularly the over-prescription of antidepressants. We have people who are, what has happened is that we've medicalized normal human despair. I'm not talking about schizophrenia and bipolar, where obviously there's a very serious and legitimate conversation around the use of psychotherapeutic drugs. I'm talking about the spectrum of normal human suffering. You went through a painful divorce. You lost someone that you loved. You went through a financial hardship, professional loss. These things happen. And learning how to navigate those turbulent waters is part of learning how to navigate through life. So why is everybody so stressed? Why is everybody so anxious? And also, you know, people say, I have an anxiety disorder, or I have a depressive disorder. The current psychotherapeutic model focuses on the individual sufferer. But like your show is about working moms, interesting on that one. Because the reason why many working moms are so stressed in our society is not just because of something that's happening in Gloria's life or in Olivia's life or in Diana's life. It's things that are happening collectively. Mm-hmm. And if we concentrate too much on just our own individual suffering, sometimes we don't see the forest through the trees. For instance, the fact that out of all advanced nations, we're one of, I think, two that don't have paid maternity leave. the fact that we don't have, exactly, the fact that we don't have free nursery school, that we don't have, you know, not just K, but pre-K. The fact that we have so much income inequality, you know, when I was growing up, one income, a normal middle class family, the father, or if it was the mother, but at that time it simply was usually the father, one income could support a family with two or three kids and a normal middle class existence, and then one parent staying home. Today there is so much stress on people. So if the woman thinks there's something wrong with me, there's nothing wrong with you. You're sensitive to what's happening. What's wrong is that something that is wrong with us. And this is not the time to be numbing ourselves or distracting ourselves. This is time for us to be addressing the ways in which we can realign our thinking and realign our society with things that will transform conditions that make so many people suffer.
It's so interesting to me because when you hear you speak and I hear you, I read your writings, it all makes so much sense. It all seems like, well, yeah, shouldn't we see it that way? Shouldn't instinct just tell us that? Why do we tend to go against what seems so natural? Why do we tend to rather than allow that emotional torment to propel us toward the resolution of the deeper issue, why do we tend to, rather than do that, repress it or try to just push it away rather than allow it to organically do what it's supposed to do?
Well, we live in a society today that is so dominated by a business model, and that business model values productivity above all things. Now, if you're healthy about your inner life, you know that there's nothing more productive than processing your grief. There's nothing more ultimately productive than feeling your feelings. But what the business model calls productive is often making sure that you don't really process your feelings because there's no time for that. So when I was younger, when people, let's say, had lost a husband or a wife or a loved one, it was understood that grief would take a while. Today, it's get over it, get over it, get over it. We have taken a cheap yellow smiley face and imposed it on everything so that people think that if I'm very sad over something, which if you look at it from the same perspective, you're sad because it is a sad situation. Today, people too often think, well, there's something wrong with me, that I'm so sad for so long. Now, we, on one hand, we talk about the wisdom of the body, and we're all doing muscle testing because the body is so wise. But if the body is so wise, why are we not including our tears in the wisdom of the body? So if you have 45 tears to cry, crying 17 is not enough. Now, you add to that that there are huge financial forces that are invested, I call it in the book, pharmacological psychotherapeutic industrial complex. Mm-hmm. We really need to awaken. We need to mature. We need to grow up about this. You have a pharmaceutical industry that's going to be a $1 trillion industry by the year 2020. Right. Because we're market-based, this is an interesting thing in relation to antidepressants. If we were not a market-based healthcare system, let's say a country like England, because it is a universal healthcare system, their system is invested in your only staying on medication as long as you absolutely need it. They want you to get off because they don't want to have to spend the money.
Right.
Here, the financial investment of huge behemoth economic forces is that you stay on it. That's why so many people are told not only that you, quote-unquote, need medication, but that you should, quote-unquote, expect to be on these for the rest of your life. Mm-hmm. This is particularly, and we talk about the working mother. I'm a working mother. My daughter is 26 years old, so it's a different time. But as the mother of someone in her 20s, you know, the FDA officially warns that people in their who are 25 years old and younger taking antidepressants, that there's a higher risk, an increase in risk, not a decrease in risk of suicidal ideation. And there are people today who are putting their kids on antidepressants. I heard of a woman the other day, all four of her children are on anti-anxiety medication. I heard of someone the other day who was putting her daughter, a 13-year-old girl, on Wellbutrin. I heard of somebody the other day who said her 16-year-old was on Abilify. Abilify, which is one of the largest selling prescription drugs in the United States, is an antipsychotic drug. So there are people being prescribed antipsychotic meds who do not have serious mental illness, haven't even been diagnosed with serious mental illness. So I think if anybody should be looking at this, it's the mothers.
Absolutely. And I want to talk a lot more about that when we come back from the break right after this. I'm Bettina Bush, your host. You're listening to Working Mother Radio, and we are speaking with Marianne Williamson. Stay with us.
Cancer is the number one cause of death by disease for children in the U.S. today. Since the Austin Hatcher Foundation's birth in 2006, it has grown to provide unique programs to help the children and the families affected by pediatric cancer. Support begins at the time of diagnosis and continues throughout survivorship at no cost to families. Lives touched by the foundation continue to rise each day. But we need your help. Donate, volunteer, or partner with the Austin Hatcher Foundation. Learn how you can get involved. Visit hatcherfoundation.org for more information.
Hey, everybody. Welcome back to Working Mother Radio. I'm Bettina Bush, your host, and we are continuing our conversation with bestselling author Marianne Williamson. Now, before the break, we were talking about prescription drugs, and I want to get into Tears to Triumph and the fact that I'm gonna read something. Modern civilization has itself become a depressing phenomenon, predicated on principles that dissociate human beings from the feelings of connectedness and wholeness, without which happiness cannot be found. Now, as moms, I can tell you one of the main things that I hear from our listeners and our readers at Working Mother all the time is this concern about the internet and the texting and the social media and the fact that children are no longer learning how to look someone in the eye, shake their hand, and have a conversation with them. Now, add on top of that, that we are now raising a generation that literally from the time they're watching Nick Jr. at 4 or 5 years old are seeing ads for pharmaceuticals, which we never saw when I was a child. That was not, it was not at the time something that you saw. These kids are seeing Ambien, they're seeing Flonase, they're seeing all these prescription drugs, you know, Butrin that you just spoke of. They're seeing all of this. It's being embedded in who they are, that these things are just fine, and you know, and if you're suffering from this, then you should take this. And added on to that, this dissociation from the social media and the texting and the technology, you start to feel like as a mother, this is such an uphill battle. How am I supposed to be addressing this in a way that's going to be effective?
Well, first of all, I'm happy to hear that this is the conversation that you and your audience are having. I'm happy, the very fact that you're having the conversation means people are awakening to how insane things are. I was at a restaurant in Houston one day, and there were 5 adults at the table, and they had a little baby, small enough that the child was still in a high chair at a restaurant. And that little baby had a little pink screen, and while everybody else was having dinner, the child was looking at the screen. And I was thinking, this is so dangerous, because this is the age where that baby's brain development, he or she, I can't remember if it was I think it must have been a little girl, because I remember the screen was pink. She should be looking around the table. This is how her brain is learning what social cues are, language skills, and so forth. So even then, I remember thinking, why did you even have a child if you don't want to parent? And I think a large part of the answer of what you're saying is we have to stand up and take control. And one of the things we have to take control over is one of the areas it has to do with effective and appropriate parenting. You know, it is out of control, and it's only we need to join together. We need to have the conversations. And just today, I was at lunch, and I saw this little boy. He was definitely under 5, 3 or 4, and he had a little cell phone to his ear. And at first I thought it was cute until I saw that the cell phone was actually on. How many articles do we have to read about the effect of these cell phones on our brain before we consider the baby probably shouldn't have it to his or her ear? Mm-hmm. What are we thinking? And I know it's difficult. I've had a child, and I also know, and I do have a child, but I also know you have to get in with these things when children are very, very young. Because what starts to happen after early childhood, you don't have control. And once you're in the teenage years, you know, you're in the eye-rolling years where you really don't have control. But exercise control while you have it. You do not, your little one does not need to have all that access to screen time. You do have the ability to change this. And you do, in terms of what you were talking about, the sale of pharmaceuticals, I want you to know that came in the 1980s. Previous to President Reagan, pharmaceutical companies, medicines were not able to advertise them on television. And that whole deregulation orgy came in the 1980s. When I was growing up, medicines could not be advertised on television. And so I'm just glad to hear that you and your generation and your audience realizes this is really bad and you need to talk to your kids. And you need to, you know, too many Americans let the kids bring the cell phones to the dinner table. The computer's on. People are texting during dinner. And, you know, I want to tell you something happened in my life that really impacted me. Quite a few years ago, I was in Florida and I was visiting an Orthodox Jewish family. And this Orthodox Jewish family, because they're Orthodox, they observe a very serious Sabbath. From sundown on Friday to sundown on Saturday, off the grid, telephone is only used to discuss if somebody needs to be picked up for Sabbath dinner. The car is only used to pick up someone for Sabbath dinner and so forth. Now, I had been there for a couple of days, and this was a very modern family. There were teenagers, there were younger kids, and this family was very modern, very contemporary, lots of electronics going on. And I was wondering to myself, how is this going to be? And in fact, I was wondering about myself, right? Really, a whole day when I'm supposed to do anything? Right. Well, now, remember, these kids had been raised with that. Mm-hmm. So at sundown on Friday, sure enough, everything stopped. Now, these kids had been raised by it, so they were with it. So there was no, oh, Mom, do I have to? It was simply understood. And what I saw happen over that 24 hours, I understood why it says in the Ten Commandments, keep the Sabbath holy. The older kids were talking to the younger kids. The older kids were talking to their grandparents. Mm-hmm. Parents were talking to their parents and to each other. You really saw how doing that one day a week, human relationships were realigned.
Yeah.
There wasn't anything electronic going on. You could go in the backyard. You could sit with the flowers. You could have a deep conversation.
Mm-hmm.
And I saw the value of that, and I became much more, my daughter was very little at the time, and I really took much more ownership of my ability to make a decision about time that was spent. I remember once when we were living in Michigan, my daughter was a little girl, they had a big storm, and this happens a lot in places like Michigan, you know, because of the weather in the winter. And it was one of those storms that blew out all the circuits and all the lights and all the electricity and went off for a while. And I remember my daughter, she had never in her lifetime yet been through that, but she was aware. She said, Mommy, what are we going to do if it turns dark and, you know, we don't have lights? I said, well, honey, what we're going to do is we're going to light the candles. Now, we did exactly that. And my little girl and I were telling stories to each other, having this really deep conversation. And then when the electricity came back on, we had that experience that we all have had where all of a sudden it all comes back on at once and you don't even realize how much electronics you have going on until a moment like that. And it was so jarring. It felt almost violent. And I started to form the thought, oh, let's just turn them back off again, you know, because we were in such a sacred, holy, pure, deep place with each other. And my little girl looked at me before I even had a chance to say that. And she said, we can't get it back.
Oh,
I know. And so there are so many lifestyle decisions we can make. We do not have to. And I know it's hard, but you start when they're little. Parents have got to be okay with parenting. Because I say so has got to be in our lexicon again. Because I say so. That is why.
I just heard myself say it the other day, and it was so liberating.
Yes, but you know what? You start early. The problem is when people like try to instigate the stuff later. You start with these little ones, and then it's because I say so. There's going to be 1 hour of TV, and when I say so, and we are going to talk, and at dinner, no, you're not going to be texting at dinner. You know, be a mother, collect those tablets, say it's not going in there. And also, we really do need to be having a conversation as parents about what these cell phones are doing to all of us, but particularly brains that are undeveloped.
Mm-hmm. That's it.
And then, you know, if we ourselves are, you know, distracting and numbing ourselves, how surprised can we be at some of the stuff that's happening to our children?
And I think that is a lot of the root of the issue there. I think you just hit the nail on the head. We're going to be back with more with Marianne Williamson right after this. I'm Bettina Bush, your host. You're listening to Working Mother Radio.
On the track, even 1/100th of a second decides who wins and who loses. That's why Bridgestone uses advanced racing technology to create their fastest street-legal replacement tire yet. The new Bridgestone Potenza RE71R. Engineered with an innovative hydro-evacuation surface and unique tread compounds, the new Potenza RE71R is designed to give you maximum grip and ultimate cornering on or off the track. Bridgestone is changing the game in tire performance.
Welcome back to Working Mother Radio. I'm Bettina Bush, your host, and we are continuing our conversation with Marianne Williamson. She is a best-selling author, and I know that you've probably been exposed to her more than once. Her thoughts and teachings on spirituality and the human condition, and the way that she reflects on them are so valuable to us in society. And Tears to Triumph is the new book. And Marianne, if we want to pick up Tears to Triumph, where can we go to get that?
Well, almost any bookstore and Amazon.com, and you can go to Marianne.com and learn more. I do speak every Wednesday night, and those live streams are for free. But the book, just go to Amazon.com or BarnesandNoble.com or into a bookstore. Go to a bookstore, and most of them have it, unless they're sold out, which is okay too, except not for you.
And if you do get an opportunity to see Marianne speak live, it really is a wonderful experience and one that I highly recommend. I've done it many times. And I want to get back to our conversation before the break about, we were talking about parenting and the value of Because I Said So. And, you know, one of the things that you brought up was if we ourselves as the parents have that cell phone glued to us or at the table, you know, a lot of the times many women that I speak to have that challenge with their husbands also being on the same page in terms of, you know, you got to bring home the bacon, you got to be accessible to the boss, got to, you know, they're that not putting that inability to put down the iPad or put down the cell phone because you have to remain available and, you know, in order to be competitive. What advice do you have in terms of the partnership with the husband or the boyfriend, you know, the co-parent who's in this with us?
Well, there are a couple of things going on. First of all, there is an awakening in our culture today, and we realize that it's really sick that everybody has to feel that we have to be on professionally 24/7 in order to keep our jobs, let's say. That's number one. Number two, people are realizing the addictive nature of of some of the electronics. The truth of the matter is we sometimes don't have to be as alert to every single text and every single email as we almost pretend that we have to be. And a lot of return to natural life cycle living that doesn't suck our soul out of us and ultimately bring all kinds of dysfunction to our bodies and to our families and to our communities is that we ourselves have to make some lifestyle decisions. Now, when it comes to working women, there's also a particularly powerful one here. When a woman is working, we're in a masculine mode. We're the giver. And what happens is if we go from work and then we go home and we have to continue to be the generator, we have to cook the dinner, we have to take care of the kids and the homework and do all that stuff. And then sometimes the man in the house or the partner, the romantic partner, expects us to be goddesses in bed by 10 or 11 at night. It doesn't work that way. And one of the things that I heard Pat Allen say once is that it takes a woman's brain 30 minutes to transition from that masculine, go out there, get it, you know, make it happen mode to that divine feminine that we all crave as women. And that the men around us crave too if we're with men. Mm-hmm. So that 30 minutes of, I call it goddess time, you know, of yoga, of meditation, of a bath, of a bubble bath, of candlelight, of soft music. You know, candlelight and soft music and all of those things really affect the nervous system. Once again, get your children into it early. You know, don't say I don't have time to meditate because I have little ones. Teach the little ones from a very early age. No, these are 5 minutes. God is here with us. We're going to be very quiet right now. That's why it's so good when these little ones are going to meditation classes and the little ones are going to yoga classes. Introduce this early. And if you haven't introduced it early, say that you're introducing it now. In terms of the men, if they're not in with it, you know, a lot of times women say to the man, you know, I don't have the power to tell you you're not going to smoke, but at least I have the power to tell you you're not going to smoke in the house. Even Barack Obama, they, you know, leaves the White House and goes out on the balcony to smoke. And I think the same can be. We can really try. You know, most men will understand it's really bad for the marriage, it's bad for the kids if we're going to be texting during dinner, if we're going to be on our cell phones during dinner. You know, it's just the whole thing's just gotten out of control. Everybody knows it. It's mm-hmm. just it's just getting worse and worse and more tight and more crazy. And the good news is that we're even having this conversation because people are realizing it. You wake up to something, and there's always that time lag between the time when you realize the problem and the time when you seriously address it. But that's where we are, and that's why when you asked me a few minutes ago about something, I said, well, the good news is that you and your audience are discussing those problems, because 5 years ago, we were still all so enamored of the craziness.
Well, and the good news is we have people like you to spread the word like wildfire and enlighten people on a broader level. So we're so appreciative. And if you haven't had a chance to pick up Tears to Triumph, clearly most people have because it is a New York Times bestseller. But if you haven't, grab it, because it really is something that is not only timely but necessary for us to delve into and understand. And as parents and as working moms, it really does help. It really is a tool that we're able to use in and apply to our lives and help improve the state of not only our society but of our children's lives, which is, you know, of the utmost importance to all of us, I know. Thank you so much, Marianne, for taking the time to be here with us today.
Thank you so much. All my best to you.
Thank you. And that's it for our show today. Thank you so much for being here with us. As always, visit us on workingmother.com. And don't forget, there's no way to be a perfect mom, but there are a million ways to be a good one. I hope that we've been helping you out with that. And thank you so much for sharing the journey with us. We'll see you next week.
If the measure of a car was how many people it turned into people who love cars, the Subaru Outback would be worth its weight in gold, thanks largely to its symmetrical all-wheel drive. Unlike other systems that wait for a wheel to slip, it powers all four wheels all the time. All while with better fuel economy than midsize SUVs. And the fact that the Outback is made in a zero landfill plant doesn't hurt either. It's a car that is truly built to be loved. Love. It's what makes a Subaru a Subaru.